Case set for argument today is Joseph Payne versus Milwaukee County and Mr. Sutton.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Sutton. My law office is in Milwaukee, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Joseph Payne. The lower case scenario is indeed somewhat worthy of Lewis Carroll, or Alice in Wonderland, Through the Looking Glass. After two jury trials, one trip to this court, and 10 years of litigation, Mr. Payne finally prevailed before a jury in November of 99 or 2000, and the jury decided that Milwaukee County and the Personnel Review Board had violated his First Amendment rights and wrongfully discharged him from his employment.
As you're aware, Mr. Sutton, this panel is not unfamiliar with the factual predicate for this. I would like to ask you is what you think the purpose of Rule 68 is.
Well, the purpose of Rule 68 is to
prompt people to accept the offers that are made in settlement. And if they reject them, there is a section which says what happens if the amount then brought in by the jury is less than the settlement offer. Am I correct?
In the context of a civil rights case, I respectfully submit you're not correct.
Ah, so that what your distinguishing feature is that civil rights cases are different from other cases. Does it say so in Rule 68?
No, but it doesn't say, I shouldn't say just civil rights cases. I should say any cases that implicate as a part of the remedy injunctive relief.
But let me follow up on that, because like Judge Bauer, I certainly don't see any language in Rule 68 that carves out a category of cases. There are two problems I have with your position. One of them is that your appeal is too late from the package of relief that you received. This court made that clear. So we're looking at a record where the amount is a $10,400 verdict. Secondly, I think you need to distinguish really carefully between two parts of your appeal. One has to do with your own right to post-settlement offer attorney's fees. Because Rule 68 speaks very directly to that point. The second has to do with whether the definition of the word costs in Rule 68, when it's applied to the losing party, can include that losing party's attorney's fees. That's a whole different issue, whether you get yours versus whether you have to pay theirs.
Well, I believe it's been decided both by Judge Posner's decision in Poteet and in
Which are you talking about now? Which of those two? As I said, there are two issues on the table. One, do you get your fees after the offer? But two, do you have to pay the other side's fees? You're addressing now number two?
Number two.
Okay.
It's been decided in Poteet and more clearly in Crossman versus Marcocchio in the First Circuit. And this was brought to the attention of the magistrate judge, and although she distinguishes Poteet, she didn't address Mark Crossman at all. So I think it's been decided, and thus those cases are reversed. They're not entitled to their attorney's fees. The question of whether we're entitled to our attorney's fees does implicate whether or not Mr. Payne was entitled to reinstatement to his employment. Whether she did it or not is not the question. It's whether, I searched arduously to find a case that said expressly that a civil rights plaintiff who is injured by the defendant's behavior is entitled to be made whole. I couldn't find that express statement in a Seventh Circuit case, although I'm sure there's a plethora of them where it is said. But I did find it in a First Circuit opinion, $1 million award that was appealed in Scarville versus Cabletron Systems, Inc., 554 Fed 3rd, 931.
Is that cited?
It's 54.
Yeah, I see. Did you cite it in your brief?
I don't believe I did.
you know, we have a little rule which requires you notifying both the court and opposing counsel of any citation you're going to use.
Okay.
But go ahead, use it anyway.
All right, well, I'm sure this principle is recited in many cases, but the point is that the plaintiff is entitled to be made whole. It goes on to say not to be enriched, but there's no question he's entitled to be made whole. And how in the world, when you look at the Rule 68 offer, he was not offered to be made whole. He wasn't offered his job back. He was offered an opportunity. He was offered a job in the House of Correction or some other place. He's never been offered his job back. He won the case. As part of being made whole, he was entitled to get his employment back. He was wrongfully terminated in violation of his First Amendment rights. It's a mockery to say that $10,400 is less than the amount they offered in 1994 before the appeal to the Seventh Circuit and the remand. So I don't believe the Rule 68 offer was the verdict was less than the Rule 68 offer. And I guess there's a certain concept of fundamental fairness in what the civil rights laws are about. But to deny him I agree. Apparently we didn't appeal from the right orders, but you know there was so many of them, and I was trying to get a final order to appeal from. All I can say is I think that the lower court decision should be reversed and the case remanded, and that Mr. Payne should be awarded his attorney's fees.
Thank you. Ms. Poles?
Good morning. Mary Ellen Poles, Principal Assistant Corporation Counsel, appearing on behalf of all of the defendants. Obviously, this case has been going on for a very long time, but at the end of the day, Mr. Payne had his jury trial.
Well, and my question for you is really similar to what I was trying to raise with Mr. Sutton. He had his jury trial. He won.
Yeah.
He got $10,400, and we have two separate issues about attorney's fees here. One of them is the issue about whether he's entitled to fees for any period of time post Rule 68 offer, which you made quite early on in the day. And the second is whether the word cost in Rule 68 can be construed to mean attorney's fees for a losing party, given the language of 42 U.S.C. Section 1988, which does not, in fact, define the word cost to cover a losing party.
I agree with the ambiguity, and I wrestled with this before I filed for my attorney's fees. And I believe that the case law has been fairly consistent that in 1988, costs are defined as attorney's fees, but the problem is...
But for a prevailing party,
yes.
That's the problem. It seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you are, in fact, asking us to create a conflict with both the First and the Eighth Circuit. The First Circuit's decision in Crossman against Marcosio deals with the 1983 plaintiff and deals with 1988 and says that a losing party doesn't get attorney's fees as part of the cost shift under Rule 68. And the Eighth Circuit's decision in O'Brien against City of Greer's Ferry, again, exactly this context, 1983 case, 1988 fee statute, says that a defendant can't get the attorney's fees. Now, you certainly do get your costs after the Rule 68 offer. That's what Rule 68 provides. But that particular attorney's fee statute isn't a two-way shift. It's a one-way shift for a prevailing party. So is it true that you want us to create a conflict with those circuits? And if so, why should we?
Well, in thinking this over, and I believe that the magistrate judge and I did misinterpret Merrick v. Chesney. I concede that, though at the time when I filed my motion, I was very convinced that I was entitled to my attorney's fees. And the only thing that I could realistically come up with was a redefinition or an expansion of the definition of prevailing party, because in this instance, I have to be perfectly honest with the court, the conduct of this litigation from the perspective of my client, Milwaukee County, the Personnel Review Board, and Dr. Jeffrey Jensen, our medical examiner, we felt like prevailing parties. And we made an offer of judgment because we felt it was fair. We understood the potential for liability, and at the time that I made the offer of judgment, there was a second component to the offer of judgment, and that was a job and $18,000 in cash, because there were two Title VII claims with this case. And that was the only way I knew to stop damages, cut the losses for the county. In Title VII, an unequivocal job offer is all that you have to make. And I do not agree with Mr. Sutton that he is entitled to a particular job. I believe that the burden is on the employer in these situations to make an unequivocal offer of a job. And as you know, in the way life is, when someone gets terminated, a lot of times another person fills that position, and the law does not require the employer to bump that person out of that job. We can offer any job in mitigation of damages, and that's what I did here. But, and so there's no doubt in my mind that Mr. Sutton is not entitled to any attorney's fees, and that the county acted in good faith and complied with Rule 68 and offered him three times what he got in a lump sum, or in the alternative, he could have been working since 1996 and gotten some money. And I think it's interesting that the money that the county offered in Part 2 of the offer of judgment is more than the attorney's fees ended up being for Mr. Woolman, who had represented the plaintiff up until the offer of judgment. So I think that, oddly enough, in this particular situation, I was pretty right on as to what this case was worth. And so from that perspective, my client felt like we had prevailed in this very difficult litigation. Now, I recognize that that's not a definition of prevailing party that exists in the law, and maybe if I had thought of it at the time, I could have come up with a creative argument. But I believe that the magistrate judge and I did misinterpret Merrick v. Chesney, though it felt good at the time, and it felt right at the time.
These cases are not always crystal clear.
No, they aren't. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 10 o'clock.